Welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby, a fortnightly show where I poke software testing with a stick and see what happens. Welcome to episode 60 of Let's Talk About Test Baby. I'm Jem Hill, and this week I am talking to Matt Breton, who you'll be hearing a lot more of in the coming months. This week I'm just going to jump straight in with the interview, which was done in the pub, which is a concept that has never been done before in testing podcasts. I don't know what you're talking about. Enjoy! And this week on Let's Talk About Test Baby, we have Matthew Breton. Hello.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad, how are you?
And thank you for going to be on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
No worries. Listeners, Matthew is going to be a regular, semi-regular-ish contributor to the podcast, so you'll have another voice to listen to than just mine all the time. So yeah, you'll be hearing him more regularly on the podcast. This week, we're going to be discussing the human side of testing, and is that more important than knowing about testing tools and the tools that we use? My opinion is that it is at least as important. I would lean to slightly more importance, personally.
Okay, but I think, obviously, you're going to agree eventually with this one, but tools are still obviously important to our job. They come up a lot. Frequently find a lot of job descriptions out there, and I'll have mentioned various languages and things like that that you need to know and things like that. But I stick to the phrase, a bad workman always blames tools, and that is knowing how to use the tools is more important than just the tools.
Yeah, that is very true. And tools, in a way, most tools can be learned. I mean, yeah, you have to be able to learn, you have to want to learn, which again comes back to the human side of testing, but at the end of the day, you can be learning things, you can be taught things. Whereas some of the softer skills, it's a lot harder to learn and be taught them if you don't have that propensity towards them in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think back to when I started testing, just didn't appreciate how much psychology is involved in it all, and how much our job relies on being able to communicate and work together effectively and that kind of thing, which is, yeah, not about tools, but it's all about understanding people and how they work together.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that communication skills are tools because you communicate with different people in different ways, depending on your relationship with the person and what you want from them. So you could argue in a way that communication is a tool, but it's still one that's a lot harder to learn than Selenium.
Yes, and I don't think everyone sees it as a tool as well. People even see it as a skill of testing. Like, I think a perception is of testing that you're there to find bugs, and that's it. And I don't think you appreciate some of those softer skills, like the communication skills, like the awareness of psychology and awareness of how you interact with other people. So the obvious example is a developer. You go to them with a bug, and you're always trying to think about how can you communicate this bug with their work to them without being critical. So there's a lot of psychology just involved in that one example.
Yeah, exactly. There are people where I know, when I work with, I know I can go up to someone because we have that relationship and go, yeah, you fucked this. Whereas there's some where I'll go, found an issue and talk through the issue. And it's not that one developer is more resilient than the other, it's just we've got a relationship with the first developer where we do swear at each other and we do walk up and say that, whereas the other one, we're a lot more professional. And that's just how it is.
To take it even further as well, I think if you think about quality, so usually as a tester you're hired in to improve quality or assure quality, some people might say, and there's a really good quote I think everyone knows from Jerry Weinberg, quality is value to some person. And what's great about that quote is it kind of emphasises that quality is not a known thing, it's not a factual thing, it's who is this person, what does value mean to them. And so right there, how can you come in and say, yeah, this is quality? You don't know that to begin with. Maybe you can never know that, really. You're always trying to talk to whoever the customer is, whoever the end user is, and find out what value means to them. And again, loads of psychology involved in that, and loads of soft skills, nothing to do with tools, well, people skills and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And because it's to some person, so even in the same project, quality can mean different things to different people on the team that you're in. And so if you are going down like bug advocacy, you might have to explain different implications to different people because that's what they care about.
Yeah.
And that's what their goal is on the team.
Yeah, and also all those different people in your projects talk a different language. Your project managers talk a different language to developers. Developers will be talking from a technical level about specifics about a problem, whereas your project manager may be talking more from a business kind of point of view, maybe from a customer, but maybe more internally, how much money does this mean to us, rather than how difficult is this to solve necessarily and things like that. So I think I'd also go and say that as a tester, you're always trying to target the most important books, perhaps, or trying to make the most of your time to be an effective tester. And at least I feel you quickly come to the realization the most expensive book you can have is to spend months and months building something that nobody wants.
Yeah.
And why does that happen? Because we make assumptions. Because, as you sort of suggested before, that an idea comes into your company, goes through various people, from business analysts through to developers and so on, and a lot of the information gets lost and degrades over time before it gets back to the customer.
Yeah. I mean, Agile is great for that, because the idea is you get the customer in sooner. But even like, I like being in like the workshops and the planning sessions, just because I can start questioning stuff and seeing what assumptions we are going to make and start trying to tackle that. Like, so Agile's great because you bring everyone early, you can do that, but you can still get to the end of a sprint and you think you've done fine, and then they come back and go, no. So, okay, I see now what we've done. And sometimes I've had issues where I found something that I think is an issue, like a UX issue or something, and almost the clients come to me and go, no, that's fine. And so I've had to like, well, no, this might be an issue for certain people, and so how do I explain to the client the quality that I'm trying to provide in raising this bug, and you know, saying I can't pass this because there's this bug that I feel is a blocking bug. And sometimes like everyone agrees with me other than the client, so we'll fix it. But it's that weird thing of how many different, like, what different bugs means to different people.
Yeah, and what are the risks involved? Does everyone understand the risk? I actually was on a project recently where this kind of came up, where they were like, oh, we don't want any testing because we're fine if there's any problems. You start asking the question, you think you understand the risks, but do you? Like, do you really accept that? Because you can't really know that. And it actually came out that this project I'm referring to, it wasn't so much that it had bugs that were a problem, but the way it got developed and communicated wasn't very good, let's say. And I personally feel if a tester was a little bit more involved in that project, it would have been at least better communicated. Information would have got or been highlighted about it. Not necessarily highlighting problems, but at least keeping a project on track and keeping people aware of what's going on. Because that's what fell down in that project. It kind of lost track of where it was, and things that might have been or were a problem were either forgotten about or left aside. So it's like people were aware of problems and did find them anyway without a tester being there, but they kind of got forgotten about as the project wore on. They were left aside because they didn't have to be worked on immediately. Yeah. Then they would never return to, because no one was there saying, hey, what about this? We probably should fix that. And not to say a tester would always remember all that stuff, but trying to keep a project on point and thinking about what is all the information around the project that a project manager might need to know before they, let's say, go live with something or tell people to use particular things. I think that's another thing a tester can do. It's not just finding problems.
No, yeah, exactly. It's not just finding the problems. It's sometimes just flagging things up and seeing what people are thinking or what they've thought about. And an issue I find, because I can be a bit of a control freak at times, is that sometimes I find myself way overstepping my boundaries as a tester, and I'm just like, no, that is definitely the project manager's job. I know, and I'm sure they're fine, they've got it. Just something if I have to pull myself back in, because I'm like, actually no, that does creep into the project manager's role now.
See, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I just had a tester from my team move on to be a project manager, and I was telling them they make a great project manager because we have this great experience and view of the challenges of software development and the challenges that the project managers have in trying to plan it and keep on top of it. So it is still hard though, not, you know, stepping on their toes and telling them what to do and things. That comes back to what we're saying really, which is there is such a human element to this. It's not just you're going to test this, find problems, and then tell someone about it. It's not as simple as that. It's a lot of complexity involved in just the telling someone about it, even. So to take this on another tangent as well.
All the tangents.
I have a weird interest in aircraft investigations. I think it's because it has a lot of similarities to testing. And one of the interesting facts I came across recently was, according to a Boeing report anyway, from recently, so fully trust these facts, but it's interesting to think about anyway, and they sound reasonably true. in the 1930s, over 80% of all air crash incidents were down to mechanical failures, versus 20%, or roughly 20%, of the human error. Now, if you look about modern day, it's now 80% human error and less than 20% mechanical error.
Yeah.
So even though they managed to eliminate all possible mechanical problems into new processes and things like that to make sure things are properly tested, mechanically fine and that kind of thing, they still have incidents, and they're predominantly caused by humans making mistakes. And I think that's where we come into it all the time, because although you can take a step back and think, well, surely if we program everything and we know everything, we can build something that just works, and if you could consider everything, then surely we can just do that. And I think it proves out that you can't do that. Humans make assumptions, they make mistakes, and that's why we have a job. So then to rely on tools, so like there's tools out there that will say, they'll just automate testing for you and tell you when things are wrong. Well, they won't, because they're all flawed in themselves. They're written by humans, and those humans are not going to think of everything, so therefore the tool isn't either, because the tool can't think.
Yeah, and also it's like, there's a thing that I keep telling, I think I've said this on the podcast like 5 times or something, where most of our job is not kind of things that are correct or not, is it, are they right for the project that we're in? And a machine can't tell you if it's right. It can tell you if something's passed or failed, but it can pass and still be wrong.
And
a machine can't tell you that necessarily if it's not right for the function that we've built it for, or if there's an issue with the way it fits together or something. A machine won't be able to pick that up. You've got to have that human layer on the top.
Yeah, you still need the analysis, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You could have loads of, like, let's say security testing. I mean, this is actually quite a common example. People use, I think it's Zap, I think it is, the OWASP tool for security testing. That will tell you security problems, right? But it won't tell you which ones are actually important and what they mean. You have to go look into what it's flagged up and then decide, oh, yeah, that one, we can ignore that one, that's not important. Oh, that one is important, we need to fix that. Or even the idea of security itself, you may be testing something where security might not be a high concern. Maybe it's some completely internal system, completely shut off from the rest of the world. And maybe, you know, security is not a problem. And you need that someone to make that decision somewhere. And the same for performance testing. How can you decide what's good or bad performance up front?
Yeah, you've got to do it for your actually, there's an interesting anecdote about that. A company that I worked at previously, we were a really small agency, a digital agency. We had a client that was a really tiny site on our cheapest like service and stuff. Small, like worked outside of a unit down by Anchorage. Nothing like major. And then all of a sudden, his site went down and the server got absolutely slammed and we were completely just, what is going on? He'd put an advert in the Daily Mail and not told anyone. It's just like, we hadn't, the server's not prepared for that, because at no point did you say, oh, we're going to land an advertiser. It wasn't even it was the Daily Mail online, one of the most visited sites in the world. Told no one.
Yeah.
So at no point did we, or you, even consider that this might be a thing for you at that point. You didn't mention to us you'd be expanding or anything, and just...
Yeah.
Why would we load that? Why would we load test that for you?
Yeah. And then you think, well, if people told us up front they were going to do that, then we'd know to do it. But people don't think, oh, we're going to put 200,000 more people on this or whatever at the start of the project.
Servers just work, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if we'd just given a heads up, like, the day before, we could have shifted him around and we had servers that could have coped with that. But he just didn't even just done it and come into work to a site on fire.
It is. Yep. To also go down that tangent of the air crash stuff, because I love talking about that. Have you ever heard of the ELISA effect?
I've not.
So this is, it refers to a computer that basically tried to respond with human responses, basically. It asked you questions and you would put in answers and it would react to it. And the ELISA effect basically refers to the illusion that a human might have that a computer has, not intelligence, but it can think and it can react to what you're doing. So let's say if a computer said thank you, it's if you thought it was expressing gratitude, that's the ELISA effect. Because it's not actually expressing gratitude, it's just running a command to say thank you.
Yeah.
And I think that affects software development as well, is where people assume something is more complex or intelligent than it actually might be.
Yeah.
Typically, because we're using a lot of libraries or software we've brought in, or even just the programmers we've got in our company, we just assume that they're super smart, they program for everything. Of course, it's going to do whatever we think it can do. And a lot of the bugs or flaws in things come out sometimes from that, you know, where people just have this psychological effect where they just assume something it does more than it actually does.
Yeah. I mean, I work with Drupal, I make Drupal sites, and there are things where developers will go, there's this module, we think it'll do this, and then the module won't actually do everything we need it to do, because Drupal's built on modules, and so we have to then go and either find something else or extend the module and do a load of hacking on it and stuff. It's just like, but they found a module that looked right, at the time it looked alright, but then because they're only estimating a vague plan, they dig deeper and find it actually wasn't everything they needed it to be.
Yeah.
Just another form of assumption, isn't it?
Yeah. Another dangerous one recently is with the DevOps movement and that kind of thing recently. The reliance on automation of process and even things like a compiler, if you think about it. Programmers are relying on them quite a lot sometimes to tell them that there's a problem. So then when you think about when we automate deployments and we have automated tests, for example, it's easy for people to get lulled into this false sense of security where they rely on it so much to correct their mistakes. But when it doesn't, they actually make a bigger mistake than if they hadn't had all that stuff. They would have been more careful if that wasn't there.
Yeah, it's like overstating the safety net that you've got, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, but also misunderstanding how it works as well.
Yeah.
There's an example that I remember from some episode of Crash Investigation where these pilots are landing in a plane and they've been trained only the automated way. And they've been trained, the autopilot will throttle up and handle everything for you in an automated way. Except they made a mistake in one of the things they programmed the autopilot to do. When they were landing, they told it we're actually going for level flight. So as they were landing, the autopilot thought, oh, we're meant to get to level flight, I'll increase the thrust. The pilots are then like, oh, it shouldn't be increasing the thrust, we'll pull it back. The autopilot then goes, well, because the humans have overridden what I'm doing, I'm going to switch off now because they want to do their own thing.
Yeah.
The pilot's still assuming that it was still controlling the throttle for them.
Yeah.
So the reason it crashed is because the autopilot said, oh, you want to do your own thing. The pilot's fault, the automation was
doing it.
We're
still doing it, yeah, yeah.
And in the middle was no one was doing anything. So I can see that happening quite a bit sometimes in software development, generally speaking. And I think that's one of the challenges in testing is being able to explain that very scenario, basically, and back up and justify why we think we need to do more testing than relying on automation.
Yeah, yeah.
So another tangent I can think of as well is there's a lot of psychology in asking questions. So I think it's pretty important for us as testers to ask a lot of questions,
because
that's how we learn about products, about customers, about who's going to use this, what is this. And there's a great talk that Karen Johnson gave at Test Bash in 2015, which is on the Dojo if you want to watch it. It's really good. Basically, she talked about her background in journalism and how she brought that into testing.
Yes.
And how, obviously from journalism, she learned a lot about how to ask effective questions and get really good answers. And you start thinking about that and you realise how much there is to even just that. When are you going to ask the question? How do you ask it? Where do you ask it? All changes the answer you're going to get.
Yeah.
Just going to someone immediately and asking whatever you can get out of your mouth isn't always the best way. And it's not always the best time as well. So I think it's useful to think about all that stuff as well as a tester.
Definitely. We're doing some process changes at the moment at work. And the testing is brought in quite early because they know we'll sit down and go, so what is the point of all these things, essentially? With, like, the process, fine, whatever, I agree with it, whatever, but what are you trying to do? And does this process actually do that? And that's what we're doing. We're just like asking all the questions of why they want to do this and what problem they're trying to solve. And I think that's a question that so many clients come to us with. This is like, they'll see a competitor or they've got ideas like, this is the site we want. And then when I dial it back and go, yeah, but what are you trying to do? What problem are you trying to solve with this? And then they go, oh, some of them will have an answer. Some of them will be like, oh, we just really like this.
Yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? That sometimes they just don't have an answer to that, or they find it difficult because they start trying to think, what do you want to know?
Yeah.
And then they struggle because they're like, well, they don't really know what you're trying to get at.
Yeah.
And then it's almost a skill on your behalf to basically then think of a way of rephrasing the question to try and get, you know, they've got the answer somewhere.
Yeah, they're just,
and you know, if you ask the right one the right way, you'll get it out of them. But a lot of people are trying to think about what you want and not just answer, you know, like, basically, what are you trying to do? Like, just show me what you're trying to do.
Yeah,
and sometimes, actually, asking questions won't actually tell you. You actually have to go watch what someone does because they won't tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't realise.
Yeah. Like, someone asked me the other day what this podcast was for, and I froze. So I was like, I don't actually know what you mean by that question. I don't know what information you want from me. And I realised that was a situation that sometimes when clients have that freeze, that's the situation I put them in. They've just gone, I've just asked them a completely open question, and they're going, things?
Yeah.
And so you have to sometimes dial it back and go, right, I am a user, what should I be doing on this site, and get them to talk about it that way, because they're just like, there's so much stuff they've thought about it for so long that you're just coming as an outsider and just asking them to explain months of thought process and stuff in like, as an answer to one question.
Yeah, it's almost like coming to them and going, what's the meaning of life out of nowhere?
What's the point of doing anything?
Yeah. I think the final thing I'll talk about as well regarding the human side of testing is the humans, the testers are humans, and I think the hardest thing, especially when you're a new tester and getting experience, is overcoming the whole psychology around, you feel like at first your job is to find bugs, right?
Yeah.
And when you miss a bug, you obviously feel really bad about it. It's got, could I have found this? I should have done my job better and all that kind of stuff. There's a whole psychology around that, about dealing with the fact that you actually can't find every bug, but obviously you're always trying to.
Yeah.
So you're trying to learn from it, but not take it too hard that you've not found it.
Yeah, yeah. It's separating out the lessons that you might be able to learn from the self-blame and the, oh God, I should be better.
Yeah. And also when you're reporting to people, even when people say, oh, you're always coming with problems, and you feel like you're always a bringer of bad news and that kind of thing. That kind of psychology, human elements testing, is important for testers to be able to build themselves up to get around that and come up with ways of coping with that.
Yeah, definitely. When I first started, I think the two things I struggled with most is testing the story and not finding any bugs at all. And that made me doubt myself a lot. And the way, I mean, I joke with a lot of the devs, but they've come with the fear in their face when I walk over to them. Just like, I'm just asking a question, it's fine. And that was the two things at the start I found. I mean, now it's fine, but at the start I found it so hard to cope with a new tester because I don't like being doom and gloom.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, when you touch upon as well, coming to ask a question, people then get annoyed. You're always asking questions, and you're always making these meetings take longer, asking all these questions. And that could be quite off-putting at first, but you do need to do that. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
It's like, I need to learn about this, and the only way I'm going to learn is by asking these questions, really stupid questions sometimes, and that's okay. But at first it's very off-putting because people are like, stop asking all these questions.
In fact, that was one of the things, have you seen the Make a Tester hashtag that's going around?
No.
There's Simon Pryor, who does Aylesbury Tester Gatherer. One of the ones he's doing is he's collecting a load of things, load of skills that make a tester, and there's a load, it's a hashtag Make a Tester on Twitter, there's a load going on there, and the one I put in was not being afraid to ask difficult and stupid questions, because we talk a lot about asking difficult questions, but I ask a lot of stupid questions, and they're the ones I get a lot of value out of. If I go, I don't actually understand how this does what it does, it does what it's meant to, but I don't understand how, can you tell me how?
Yeah.
I learn a lot from that, and I think being unafraid to ask stupid questions is one of the biggest things you can do as a tester, because there's so much fear in asking questions or saying I don't know.
Yeah, and also you start to realise you're not the only one in the team that has that fear. Like, a lot of the developers also might not know something but won't ask.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to be the kind of, how do I put it?
You have to be that person.
Yeah.
And we're that person in so many ways, we may as well add another one that actually gets us information to the list. That's how I see it.
Yeah, exactly.
And being that person so many times, I may as well be that person who asks stupid questions as well.
Yeah. And also, like, you can end up on projects all the time. I mean, to me, the enjoyment I get out of testing is working on projects, on new things, and learning about all these new things. But to learn new things, you have to ask stupid questions, because you don't know anything about some things most of the time. And you feel like you're annoying all these, you know, experts, but you've got to ask them. It's any way.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, so they know you don't know as well. Because people just start to assume you know and then just go, oh, you're just going to do this right now, aren't you? And you're like, no.
No, I'm not. Yeah, that's some of the topic that I've done a couple of interviews with Lee Rathbone, and we talk about that sort of thing where when you're a tester in siloed in a project team, the developers might get a sense of looking at you and go, well, you're a tester, so you know everything about testing. And you're like, no, I don't.
Do you know anything about development?
Yeah. Cool. So thank you very much for talking to me. I think it's been a good discussion. Obviously, you agree with me that the human side is probably more important than tools.
Yeah, this is a pretty one-sided discussion,
yeah,
to be fair.
I found
it quite difficult to basically say, yeah, tools are more important, way more important.
Yeah, I did stack the deck against that. It wasn't a fair debate at all.
I think it's a good one to talk around and think about. There's lots of different kind of threads you can go down with it. And,
yeah, cool. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And that's it for this week, listeners. Hope you enjoyed it. I will see you in a fortnight with another guest episode. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch, you can email me at letstalkabouttests@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at letstalktests. We are on iTunes if you want to rate and review us on iTunes. And all show notes are on letstalkabouttests.xyz. And I'll see you on the fortnight. Bye.
Our planet would be just a point of light.